Okay, I'm going to call us to order. Can we do a roll call, please? Say go on.
Present.
Nate Bauer.
Here.
Chris Beck. Evelyn Dinsgaard. Chad Olson.
Here.
Thanks, Chad. Leslie Walls. Melody Hughes. Allie Englert.
Here.
Jamie Ward. Jesse Adencio. Sue Mitchell.
Here.
Okay. Mercedes Anderson. Chris Brooks. Jane Grossclose.
Here.
Matthew Lund. Kim Eames. Susie Fry.
Present.
Stacey Havishill. Brandon Marrero.
Here.
Jessica Armstrong.
Here.
Dina Jala.
Here.
Jessica McCallum.
Here.
Brad Crick.
Here.
Janelle Merrifield.
Here.
Phil Jacobs.
Here.
Connie Heisinger. Selena Brown. Trish Winters.
Here.
Thanks, Selena.
Thank you. Can I have a motion to approve today's agenda?
I move.
I have one small edit slash addition, which is that under guest speaker, it will be Brad Loveland, Director of UAS Human Resources, and Margot Griffiths, HR consultant. Margot is here too. Any other changes, additions, amendments? Okay. All in favor of adopting the agenda as amended?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. We have an agenda. Thank you. Next up is approval of the minutes for meetings 263 and 264. Can I have a motion to approve?
I so move.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Any edits to either set of minutes? Okay. Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of meetings 263 and 264?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Thank you. So, rolling right on into status of pending action. On the leave share resolution, thank you all for the feedback, comments, and questions you submitted. I think you should have gotten the follow-up email with Eric Bisset's responses to those questions. Nicole sent that out 2 weeks ago, maybe? A week or two ago? Did you guys get that? Okay. Making sure. So the changes are expected to be final at the end of this month. On the review process versus grievance process, Monique at South Alliance is doing some digging into a little bit more of the history around the grievance process and a few other things to get some more background information together before convening that group to discuss further. On the chancellor search, you should have gotten the doodle poll for meeting on Wednesday with the consultant. So we do have a time, and I think Nicole will send that out of the other calendar invite, because to provide kind of initial feedback, and the consultant will be working on kind of getting the position out there, written up, communicated, marketed nationally, so we can get a really strong pool. So the initial feedback with the governance groups and the consultant is so that we can tell them what is kind of overall really important to us in our next chancellor. 1 p.m. on Wednesday. In the conference room, probably?
Yes.
In the chancellor's conference room. And there is a call-in number. We'll just send that out in email. Thank you. And then when that moves on to the formal search committee process, I will be on that search committee representing staff council. So we do now have a formal seat on that process. So from now on, I think we'll move this to ongoing business as chancellor search. But we did actually have success with this resolution. It just took a while to get it concrete and formal. So that one. And then on volunteer day proposal and resolution, Nate and I discussed this again with the interim chancellor and with Kari Burrell, their increased staff. They're looking at who to appoint to a committee, the members outside of staff council to move this forward and look at actual implementation and the how and when. So we'll just keep pestering them until that committee is formed and we can start working with them to actually get this organized and implemented. But they continue to be supportive of the idea. It's just a matter of the actually getting to the pavement and moving along on it. All right, any questions on any of the pending actions? All right. Is anyone here for public comment? I don't see anyone in the room. Anyone online for public comment? I don't see anyone outside of staff council. Okay. So, let's move right on then to our guest speakers today. So, Brad and Margo from HR to talk about performance evaluations.
Today and talk to you guys. I appreciate that. And I also brought with me Margo Griffith. She's our senior HR consultant in HR. And besides being a consultant and doing everything else, Margo is also helping spearhead the new recruitment software that's going to be coming live in January. So that's a huge, huge task. And so that's why she's here today, because she's going to be talking to you about the PageUp implementation and how that's going. The reason that I'm here is I wanted to talk about the performance evaluation that we currently have in place. I've looked at numbers. I'm also a supervisor and I'm also a realist. So performance evaluations are not probably getting done consistently and at 100%. And because of accreditation, because it's the right thing to do, we need to be performing and completing performance evaluations consistently and timely. And they also hopefully need to have some genuineness and hopefully drafted in such a way that's going to help the employee, because they're strictly development tools. And for the last 8 years, I've been saying that everywhere I go, that performance evaluations are just development tools that are a recap of how you're doing. But I think we overcomplicate some things sometimes, maybe. And HR can do that because we love forms. We spent 22 committee meetings on the last performance evaluation, the one that is probably 6 pages, and after you put in the essential function of the position description, it's 9, 10, 11 pages. when you're supervising 10 and 12 people, it's really difficult to take the time, which I know you need to as a supervisor, but it's difficult to take that time and really do something that's meaningful for the employee. So what happens is a lot of supervisors end up filling things out, probably at the last minute, don't remember everything from the whole year, and struggle with what words they need to put down so that it gets the message across, but also satisfies the employee to a certain degree. And that's a very difficult task. So what I'm working on, and everyone's going to have an opportunity to review this and provide feedback, but I'm looking at the completion rates that are low. And we have to get evaluations done because of accreditation and also because they're a supervisor's responsibility, and we need to make the form less difficult to fill out. And so what I'm proposing is taking out essential functions, and those are your duties. So you have 25% of your job maybe to provide management reports to your director using Excel and working with finance. That may be 25% of your job, but we're not going to evaluate you on your essential functions anymore. What we're going to evaluate you on is how you do your job. So they're called job factors. Currently, evaluations have your essential functions, comments, and a rating, and then they have your job factors. Job factors are things like quality of work, quantity of work, dependability, accountability. All of those are job factors. And every essential function, every duty that everybody performs on this campus, whether you're a custodian or the chancellor, those job factors apply to you. Quality of work, quantity of work, dependability, accountability, those decision-making, planning and organizing, all of those things fall into those categories. So why not rate the job factors? Because if you're not performing your job factors appropriately, your job is suffering in some of those categories. I've seen position descriptions well written on campus, very articulated, very easy to understand what the employee is doing. I've seen ones that are not well articulated, and employees struggle with what they're doing, and then the supervisor struggles on how to write the performance evaluation because the PD is poorly written. And you can take three admin generalists and put them on a table, the same grade, same position, and they have different position descriptions, and they're all over the map. And that disadvantages employees. We need some consistency, and we need something so that supervisors can say, I'm still going to make this meaningful, but I'm going to take the time to do a two-page form versus a 9, 10, 11-page form. We're still going to get the same product because guess what? As a supervisor, you should be doing performance evaluations every day, every week. You should be sitting down and mentoring and talking and doing all these things with your employees. Now, I know I'm a realist, as I said when I walked in the door. I know that's not happening, but we're trying to make strides to get people there and provide those resources, the training. But we also have to do efficient things, and we can't ask supervisors to do stuff that is overburdensome and administratively burdensome. So I'm here today just to kind of warm everybody up to this new idea. I know President Johnson is also wants to have input on performance evaluations. It's important to him. Margo is going to be talking about the Page Up recruitment implementation, which is going to have a component of performance management, and performance evaluations will be loaded in there. So supervisors will be able to complete those online, and we get to pick what's up in Page Up. So we have a couple different forms. I know departments are using their own forms. But the majority of evaluations that I see come through the office are using the long form that HR created in 2009. Most supervisors are using that form. There's also the self-evaluation, which we will work into this new evaluation so that employees get to self-evaluate themselves. I think that's important, and I don't think it should be a choice. I think all employees should be able to self-evaluate and give that information to their supervisor in order to draft and really get a good performance evaluation on paper. You need input from your employees. Sorry, I could go on and on. I'm very passionate about performance evaluation. So I'm going to stop there. I will be sending the form out as soon as some other people have had time to look at it and review it, and then I will be sharing it with staff council for review and input too as well. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Margo so she can talk about Page Up.
Actually, since we're just a little bit ahead of schedule and we have the time, it might be worth taking questions. If there's any questions for you on performance, and then we'll go to Page Up and do questions on Page Up. Just keep it covered. Does anyone have any questions at this time?
Yeah. Fred, I'm wondering if there is any sort of way to increase, increase accountability and visibility for supervisors who don't provide their performance evaluations for their employees. I'm not really talking about punishment. I'm talking about a way for supervisors to are there any tools to help them know that their deadline is coming or whatever? Because it's clearly a problem.
Yes, it is a problem. And the new page up system, they're going to be electronically. We'll be able to track them through that system. We'll be able to track who doesn't have one and who hasn't performed them. So right now, we don't have a mechanism to track performance evaluations to that degree, so the new system will take care of that problem. Because we're going to be able to softly encourage supervisors to do it, because we're going to know which supervisors are not doing them. So we'll be able to target certain folks. And not necessarily fire or hold them hostage, but as an employee, you want that performance evaluation. You want to know how you're doing. You need that. And as a supervisor, you should be held to that standard to give them, because the supervisor wants one as well. So,
Brad, you mentioned self-evaluation. The goal would be to make that part of the evaluation, make it mandatory. And I just wanted to share my experience with that. And it's hard to share this without sounding like I'm trying to narc on my people, and I'm really not. But the library has been doing self-evaluations for 2 or 3 years. And my experience with self-evaluations is I write an evaluation. I hand it to my supervisor. They go, that's great. Check. Gives it back to me. And that's it. Actually, well, they take it, but they give me a copy. You know, there's no real back and forth. And some of that's on me, to try and initiate a conversation. But I don't think there's a lot of really looking at that self-evaluation. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about, if that becomes mandatory, how do you improve that process?
Well, I think the new system will help, because it's going to be something that is forced to be in there. But I can't force people to review stuff. That is difficult to do. But I always say, as long as the employee has it in writing, at least you know that you put it down on paper. It's evidence that you've communicated your successes and your weaknesses and things that are on a self-evaluation. So we're never going to get supervisors to absolutely do what they need to do at the end of the day, and that's really take the time and read everything. There are some supervisors that will do that. And so for those supervisors, we're going to provide those tools so they can do sound evaluations. For the ones that don't do it, we're going to have to work with those departments individually, or we're just going to have to work on those supervisors, or you as an employee is going to have to take that initiative to say, look, I really need you to sit down and look at this. Can we schedule a meeting and go over? I'm like the worst employee, because I will schedule a meeting with my supervisor to do those things, to have those conversations, and they don't like it, but that's the kind of employee I am. So you maybe have to be a little bit more assertive with your supervisor, but I understand that's an epidemic. I stepped out of the university for 5 months and worked for a private company, and some supervisors really took that evaluation as, this is very important, I'm going to work on it for a couple weeks, and some supervisors just didn't. And you have to try to work with those individually to say, there is value in this, and here's how you can do it.
Just a quick follow-up, I would say that, when you're talking about in a self-evaluation, I think what happens is, if you have a supervisor who's not inclined to have that conversation, you just stop listing weaknesses. You stop thinking about, okay, what am I really good at, what am I not so good at, because why would I put that down on paper? You're not having a conversation about how to improve. So the performance evaluation becomes a bit of a, it's sort of a back and forth. If you have someone who's really involved in your process, your performance evaluation is a valuable tool. But if you don't, your performance evaluation either becomes, at best it's not much use to you, and at worst it's, if you're putting down weaknesses but not getting any sort of feedback, it's just sort of a record of maybe how you're not such a great employee.
So what would you suggest for the self? Do you suggest that the self-evaluation should not be mandatory?
I'm not sure what the common recommendation is in HR circles. My feeling is that self-evaluation seems counterproductive. If the employee is doing all the evaluating, they're not managers. Most of them are not. They don't have that same tool set to, how do you tell if an employee is doing a good job or not? What tools do you have? But I don't know. Maybe common HR knowledge is self-evaluations are really valuable. And if so, maybe there are tips for how you make that a better process. But that's just my experience, and that may not be universal for even the library.
So I have a question on that, too, and then we also have a couple of questions online. But when the new form is rolled out and the system is rolled out, will there be sort of, you know, best practices put out there? Like, for example, have your employees do a self-evaluation. Step two, schedule a one-hour meeting with the employee to discuss both evaluations and to have that conversation, things like that, where we're to supervisors who might not even consider those things, but if told, would actually do them.
Yeah, there will be best practices that are in the new system, but something that we have to remember is a lot of the supervisors have a full-time job, plus they're supervising on top of that. So a lot of these things that we see, like you're pointing out, Brad, is because a lot of people just don't have the time, and they're like, yep, check the box, did it, it's done. The new page up system is really going to be much more useful to a supervisor because of the efficiencies, the capabilities that it has, the ability for supervisors to track employees' progress, their goals, their trainings. It's as simple as in the performance module, maybe somebody sends your supervisor a kudo. The supervisor can go hashtag Brad, and it goes into your file for notes later on for your performance evaluation. So those are all efficiencies that will be afforded to the supervisors to better track employee performance and make it a little easier for folks to get those evaluations. Right now, it seems to take forever to complete them, but the system really will be much more efficient and easier for supervisors to utilize. So it is a much bigger issue, but I think with the system, it's a great tool that will help create efficiencies and allow supervisors to go there. But also, we need to make sure our supervisors understand what it means to performance manage and how to move forward in those areas.
So there's a couple questions online, but the first one is from Melody, and she asks, how are we addressing increased workload and added responsibilities due to staff layoffs that are not in current position descriptions? So what should an employee do if they think they might need to update their position description?
Well, currently their position description should be in the UAK job system, and I think they can initiate an update. Is that correct, Margo? Yeah, they can initiate an update as an employee, and I would have them meet with their supervisor and update their position description in UAK jobs.
And if they don't have a UAK jobs account, all they have to do is request an employee account, mm-hmm. and then they can get to their PD.
Okay.
But something to keep in mind, too, the new system's going to be implemented in January, so sometimes it takes a little time to work through a PD.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
So it might be worth noting on that one, too, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but our position descriptions wouldn't change just due to increasing workload. It's not about the volume of work. It's about the level of complexity or level of responsibility. So if you're taking on different types of tasks, that might be a time to update your position description. But if you're just doing more work, but the same stuff that's in your position description, that wouldn't change.
Right. And if there are questions about that, the employee can contact their consultant.
All right. And then can we get Selena audio for her question? Selena, can you go ahead and...
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So... I received evaluations and I also processed evaluations for my staff, and I believe of our form that we currently have that the essential function is the most accurate for evaluating. I am able to break down each one of the functions and point out strong points as well as weaknesses, as opposed to the area that's more vague. Like job knowledge. Someone may know a portion of their job very well and not know another portion of their job. And I think in the essential functions, it breaks it down enough that you can give kudos where you need to and, you know, and try and give them some points on where they need to, you know, get better. And it seems to work for me, and also with the self-evaluation. I have a concern about that as well, because I know that previously some supervisors have taken the person's self-evaluation and submitted that as their evaluation. And that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
I think one thing that we all need to keep in mind, we have done certain things certain ways for many years. And with a new system coming in, just the change in times, the change in the environment, we really have to approach some of these things with a new mindset. And it's difficult to transition sometimes. And I know just going through this process with getting into a new system and looking at best practices, this company that we're working with has been in business for many, many years. They've worked with many higher educational institutions, and they come with a lot of best practices from many other universities that we consider our peers, or at least we would like to utilize some of the ways that they operate. And sometimes it's very different. So it is an adjustment to our mindset. We will have to look at operating and doing business a little differently. We're going to be forced with that with the new PHF system here soon. Yes, you have a question? Right, and it actually will expedite that process. It'll, you know, just with creating all of the efficiencies, a lot of the system, when the basic information is input, it will transfer all the way through the process. So supervisors aren't out there looking for what is their job title, what is their pay rate, you know, all of those things are going to be defaulting. A lot of the duties will default, or at least the scoring criteria. It's just, I try to explain it to people, like, it's going from, remember the old suitcase phones, those really great big huge bulky things that just barely make a phone call, back to now, the brand new iPhone. That's kind of the difference in what we're working with, and you really do have to transition your mindset and look at, gosh, what could we be doing? And some of those efficiencies, they're not even in our mind. It's hard to imagine. So it's very exciting. But that is a huge issue. That's not going to be an issue here in the future.
So this is, I think, is a good opportunity to roll right into the rest of it.
Yeah, let's start talking about it, because I think it'll answer a lot of questions. How many of you have used UAK Jobs? How many of you love it? Yeah, exactly. So PageUp, I'm so excited about PageUp. It is such an efficient, I don't want to say cutting edge, but it's the new way of handling things for a recruitment system, for a performance management, and for a training module. It's really wonderful. There are a huge amount of efficiencies, technological advances for recruitment. We still do have to set up a position description. And then you go to posting, but the great thing about it is applicants, it's such a nicer, the system is so much better, it's a much better experience for the applicant. We can utilize social media. Applicants, the information transfers through, so you only have to put your information in once, and that will transfer to the next, you know, the next form, to the next form, where right now we have so much manual input. The other thing is, how many of you have new employees coming in and they have to wait a month to be able to function? They can't get computer access, email, all of those things are an issue. That will be alleviated, or at least
some of those issues will be lessened because the system will actually feed into Banner. So you have your applicant, you go through the screening process. Many of the screenings are online, so you don't have as much use for paper. Folks can get in there and type in their ratings, and it's put right into the system. Where right now everybody's printing forms, we don't know if it's the most up-to-date form for screening, and then they're shuffling around. The other thing, too, is once you choose an applicant, reminders go out. There's an onboarding portal, so folks can get all of their new hire documents. They can look at benefits information. We can have videos on welcome to the university. You can use maps in there. The other, scheduling the new employee orientation through that system. The PPA or your admin contact can set all of those things up at that hiring stage. It's just, it's so far beyond what we have right now. It's very exciting. The other thing is once you get your person hired, there are emails that can go out to not only the employee but also the supervisor reminding them of important target dates. So onboarding process we know goes on for many months. We have the 30-day window or the 3-month window that we want to look at for the probationary period for benefited folks. That's a reminder to supervisors to give feedback to their employees, to get feedback from employees to see how their onboarding experience has been so that we can make improvements there. We also have reminders that moves into the performance management module. So that is, it's set up in an org chart manner. So you go in there, it's very visual. You go in there and you can say, okay, Brad, these are all the folks that you supervise. And it's very clear who you've done evaluations for and who you haven't, or who has done their training or who hasn't, so that you can better manage your employees. And that transfers all the way through so that, say, the performance evaluation time is coming up. It can send a reminder to the supervisor, it's time for the evaluation. Here you go and get you started. That'll eventually also tie in with the training module. We haven't gotten there yet, but the recruitment and the performance management module right now are being planned out and designed to the system that we would like to see. We just had a 2-day workshop Thursday and Friday to set some of those workflows in place. The implementation is expected in January. We are going to ask folks out in the units to help do some testing. So if you're interested, please let us know. Let them know. And hopefully here at the start of the year, we'll have a nice new system. And there will be bugs that we have to work out, but the nice thing about this system is it's very configurable. We can make changes. Current system, we can't. So that's the beauty of this one. It's kind of a dynamic system where if we set something up one way and we see it's not working, we can make changes.
Are there any questions about Facebook?
Yeah.
Let's start with, we'll go through Brandy and Jane.
I had a couple questions. First is, so if it's feeding into Banner, will it automatically populate Eater then for new employees coming in?
Well, that was loud. I don't think it's PageUp that will populate Eater. I believe that comes from Banner.
And the other question is about people separating. We just had issues with our employee directory where somebody leaves and we don't know it, how, you know, to update that, and how does employees leaving for one reason or another, how is that handled?
Yeah, that's, we're going to look into that, but that is a part of Banner where the departmental person has to enter the termination record, and then it feeds Banner. So that wouldn't feed through PageUp, although it is two-way integration with Banner, so if there is an employee who does leave the system, it will feed back to PageUp for the performance management module so that that individual is removed from that org chart that I talked about earlier, and it'll be a position that that person won't be tied to it.
All right, Brandy?
I felt pretty loud, that's okay. So if you covered this while I was out, I'm sorry for the duplication. Once the new system goes in place in January, how long will it be until the old system is completely phased out? And who's going to make that decision? I mean, is HR just going to hold people's feet to the fire and say, no, you can't do it the old way at some point, or has that been discussed?
Well, there is a transition period. The one great thing about this company is they've migrated a lot of customers from our current system to their system, so they're pretty knowledgeable about how to do the transition of all of the data and to get the new system up and running, but we haven't talked about the exact timing on that because we don't know exactly how the workflows are going to work out. We're still working through those in that transition, but we're going to ask folks pretty much if there's anything new that they utilize the new system, and you're going to be forced to look at it differently. Like I said, this is a different mindset when you're utilizing this system. So as supervisors, you're going to have a lot more resources at your fingertips in there, but the admins within the unit are also going to be able to help you more because in our current system, you're pretty locked up to your role, and you can't really go outside that much. The system is going to allow you to interact a lot easier.
Okay, thank you. I mean, it sounds great. I just figured at some point that question will come up.
And we've been talking about it, but we just aren't quite there to know exact details quite yet.
Okay, thanks.
So the question that I kind of have is that there's going to be a multitude of changes and different resources that are available. What kind of communication and training resources are going to be offered to supervisors who want to migrate quickly, but maybe just, you know, it's if you're talking about making the kind of changes that you're talking about, it's going to take a lot of time to dedicate to those new resources.
Within this project, the consultants that we're working with, we actually have training time built into this for users. So I believe it'll be about a day. And also the consultants and the HR folks that you guys work with out in the department will have training as well. It's very intuitive. It's a really easy system to use. So I don't think the training will be a problem with making it function. It's just all of the other features that it has to build off of that and just, you know, the resources, the training tools that, like in UAK Jobs right now, they have a 50-page handbook in UAK for UAK Jobs that isn't searchable, where the system you could search higher, and it'll bring everything, you know, all of the resources that you need for hiring an employee, whether it be the offers, negotiating, you know, from start to finish of the recruitment.
So I can say too, I saw the system in the demo phases, the short demo and then the full day demo. And as someone who does nothing with HR and has only really interacted with UAK Jobs as an applicant and, you know, once or twice on a committee, it was completely easy to understand. I mean, it's like it all pops up in a dashboard and you can see what you need to do and you click and it takes you right through it. It's very, very user-friendly.
So maybe, I guess what I'm really getting at is how do managers know what kind of tools are available to them? Not so much how to actually get in and use them, but like how do they know that they're going to be able to do performance evaluations through PayJob? Like how do they know that suddenly they're not going to have to go and find a form that they on the internet and print it or fill it out or what? How are they going to know? I mean, are we, and I say we, how are we going to be communicating that to managers, you know, and how are we doing that? Is it going to be wrapped into the new, to a supervisor training? Or how are we going to tell people the kind of features and tools that are available to them?
Well, yeah, there's not just one way. We're going to have to communicate it in multiple ways on websites, in forums like this, and the supervisory training, you know, just information directly to supervisors it's going to be a huge communication process from multiple mechanisms.
So I see we have one more question in the room and one online, and then I think we'll wrap up.
Will the training tracking incorporate both the HR training and the health and safety training?
Yeah. All right, and online from Christopher for Brooks, is there information about this system online that we can go out and look at?
Not through the university quite yet, but I can send a link. And it'll give you, it's kind of their knowledge portal with reference materials. So I can send that link to you, and you can share that with folks.
So maybe the knowledge portal and then just the company homepage, mm-hmm. too, because I think yeah. they kind of walk through the general idea of the system.
Yeah.
So those two would be good. All right, so Christopher, I don't know if you heard us, but we'll get a couple links sent out with some more information.
Okay. Great. Good. Thank you. I wanted to get this out to our people at SBOT to take that. So.
Great. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming by. And if you guys have any more specific questions, I'm sure you can contact Brad and Marco.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm going to do some speeding officer reports here. And. And then move on to okay, so I don't have a ton of items. Staff Alliance is meeting tomorrow, so no update from Staff Alliance yet. I will note that November 4th is the Board of Regents budget meeting in Anchorage. It's an all-day thing, but you can live stream it from your desk, which I would strongly encourage doing. They are planning to include, so this is the budget meeting where the University of Alaska as a whole has put together the budget requests of UAF, UAA, and UAS, and now the university is presenting it to the Board of Regents for their approval before it gets submitted to the governor. So there'll probably be some edits there. We're anticipating that there will be a compensation increase for non-represented staff put forward to the board, likely either at the rate of union employees or slightly below, and then it'll basically be trying to push it through the legislature as well. There were a lot of concerns among university leadership about parity for staff, about not losing wages in keeping pace with inflation, and about not losing our best employees who are mobile because they feel like they're being penalized pay-wise. So what exactly that looks like at this time, I think, is still probably going to be evolving through several months. But at this point, they are looking to push it. I had a meeting with President Johnson last week and discussed some of our concerns about compensation, namely wanting to consider potentially the geo differential, in that hasn't been revisited in a long time, and what employees make depending on where they live in the state may have more or less value. It also talked about the need to do a market comparison, which hasn't been done in quite a while, to see how university employees' salaries compare to our peers in the public sector and in other, in the private sector and in other public sector areas in Alaska. And then also about the need to maintain the mechanism and the ability to reward employees for good work and to recognize that as we lose numbers of employees, that the volume of those savings in salary, if a department is down by one employee and they decide not to fill it, that's a savings with salary and benefits of probably at least $75,000 a year in many places. That department should then be able to give the employees who are left, a slight increase, a 2% increase might be
$1,000 a year, but it might mean an awful lot to those employees. So $5,000 a year for your remaining employees versus $75,000 in savings. Saying that we can't afford to do these things just means we're not thinking very creatively about doing it, in my opinion, that we really need to take care of our employees who are here and who are working through the hard times, and that departments should feel empowered to do that where it makes sense in their budget. Basically, that the narrative from the top shouldn't be, no, we can't do this. And he was very, very much in support of that and started scribbling numbers and calculations on a piece of paper and said, system-wide, we should have this much available for that. And he's very thoughtful about compensation. That's his background before before becoming a leader. And he'll be coming to the staff alliance meeting in December, along with Tara Ferguson from Statewide, to discuss compensation strategies as well, and then to provide kind of beginning input from his perspective to the compensation working group. So I think it was a pretty productive meeting, and we'll just, I think, be watching. So if there are, I'll be testifying to the Board of Regents for Staff Alliance in the morning on November 4th at their budget meeting. If there are thoughts that you would like me to communicate, particularly regarding the university budget or compensation in particular, let me know. Or if the group wanted to pass a resolution, we could discuss that later today and consider. And I'll do my best to communicate that upwards. And then you should be able to see, if you go to the board, if you just Google UA Board of Regents, it takes you to the University Board of Regents homepage. You can click into the agenda, and as soon as the documents are posted, which will include the budget request and budget presentation, you should be able to follow that through online as well, so to see the particular areas. It's a pretty lean request this year compared to past. The top capital priority for the university will be the and completing the engineering building. And then there's still discussions about deferred maintenance. And then on program requests, there are some that are real compliance-based, Title IX coordination, disabilities advising and support, and then one or two programs, academic programs, finishing the vet med startup program in a couple others. I think that's everything I had on my head. Oh, and then, like we mentioned, the Chancellor search will be meeting with the consultant on Wednesday to start kicking that off. Looking forward.
Sure. I don't have a lot that will be covered elsewhere on our agenda, but I guess I would just stress this week that nominations for open seats continue until Friday. So I would just say from personal experience that I wouldn't be involved, and I would know much less about staff council had the former rep in my unit the last time my seat was open sort of pleaded for someone else to replace him. So if there's anybody like that currently serving on staff council, I would encourage you to do a similar thing. And if there's anybody, you know, with extra open seats, and we have two at-large seats open as well. So if there's anybody that you know in your department or anywhere, staff members around campus that you think would be good, effective, committed members to this group, I would encourage you to have them seek out nominations or to nominate them yourself. That's all, and that's open until Friday.
And Nicole just reminded me as well, if your unit is having elections, you do need to actually be nominated and run again if you want to continue in your seat. So please don't hesitate to nominate yourselves if you're interested in continuing with staff council so that you are on the ballot as an option. Just if you don't, then you won't be good for the next term. So yeah, you do have to go through the election again to continue serving if your unit does up.
That's all I have.
Yeah.
Just a reminder that nominations close this week on Friday the 16th.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have Orion Lawler from Faculty Senate. Hi.
We're meeting this afternoon, and there's a resolution on our agenda basically endorsing the statewide transformation team report. How many folks actually got to read that? It wasn't terribly greatly publicized. The idea is to try and connect what's happening at statewide better to what's happening at the campuses so that everybody's kind of pulling in the same direction. I mean, that sense that we have this shared mission and everybody's working together to try and make progress on that's something we really, I mean, that would be great if we can get that to happen statewide. And if you just Google for statewide transmission team report, then you should be able to find it. So we're definitely putting forward a resolution just saying we really strongly support that idea, and to try and move more toward sort of shared governance, shared missions, shared decision making, definitely more collaborative rather than the kind of top down strange things coming from up on the hill. Other big stuff coming up, I guess, we're meeting with the Permanent Chancellor Search Consultant on Wednesday. I guess I think y'all are invited an hour before us, so that it'll be interesting to figure out what the heck we're actually looking for in a chancellor. Hard to figure out. That's certainly a job with a lot of responsibilities, but both sort of up to the Board of Regents, the legislature, regulations, and then internal management, budget decision making. That's going to be a hard position to fill. I'm personally sort of working on trying to broaden research participation across campus. There are definitely I led a review of research last year, and there's a huge variation just across campus between some units. SOM and college engineering are right next to each other, but there's just a huge difference in the number of like grant proposals that go out, the number of dollars that come back in, and if we could get more people that aren't writing proposals to write proposals and actually get funded research, this could be if we only need a couple of $20 million, this is actually a potential way to get there, to get cash into campus, and then we're also continuing with basically policy revisions, Blue Book. Some curriculum changes. It looks like our O and W requirements are going to be essentially devolved down to department level. Departments will have communication plans that they're sort of responsible for figuring out how to make sure that they're each department's graduates can communicate. So and that's it. And any requests from you that I should be working on at Faculty Senate? Please let me know.
Yeah. Faculty, just to follow up on, say, it was talking about compensation, but in the past, Faculty Senate has talked about geographic differential. That's something that comes up every year and vanishes, but maybe there's interest in it again.
Yeah.
But I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, Faculty Senate passed a resolution to support updating the differentials.
Yeah. Did the differentials get updated after the resolution?
No. UAB, yeah.
Okay, any other questions or issues for Faculty Senate?
Ryan, what is O&W?
Students getting a bachelor's degree have to have a certain number of courses with an O or W designated, oral and written intensive courses. This semester, so the O and W, it's actually sort of standing in the way of making sure the core requirements are the same across all three campuses, which we have a board mandate to do it. It's actually probably the right thing to do to get transfer students to easily be able to move from one campus to another. And there are no O's and W's at UAS. And it felt like doing the communication more at the department level has been, so my department was one of those, I think, the first to really start trying to make sure that every course essentially has some, students are giving presentations, they're writing actual, you know, great English work. So there is a transition plan in place. I believe it's 2 years. Will be the where we'll leave the O's and the NW designators on, but yeah, that's one of those tricky things.
All right, and how does that compare to kind of the national standard or the, you know, are we outdated or weird in that we still use the O and W's, or is that fairly common nationally?
I get the impression embedding communication in the curriculum has been that's the direction the national is trending, but I'm not an expert on this, so.
All right. Are there other, are O and W the only designations, or are there other designations that, no?
Those are the only required ones in the core.
Right. So we do have this, the Statewide Transformation Team Report on our agenda today as well to discuss, and the link is in there as well, representatives, for reference. So.
Yeah.
I will share our conversation with faculty senate this afternoon. So, all right. Any other questions for Orion for faculty senate? Anyone online? All right. Thank you. And we don't, just confirming, we do not have any ASUAS representative online in the room. Okay. We've got a break. 5 minutes. So thank you guys for that quick break. Let's run now right into unfinished business. So number one is the staff mentoring interest survey.
I don't know if there are any updates on that. Jamie, you're online. Do your committee have any updates on the mentoring interest survey?
No, everything is as we discussed in the executive board. Okay. Nominations are still out till the 16th, which is Friday. And then there'll be a 2-week period where we vet nominations, and then voting will open the first Monday of November.
For the mentoring interest survey.
Oh,
sorry. We're on unfinished business. Sorry.
I think so.
No problem. It's okay.
Committee report.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
There's Jamie.
Yeah, so Jamie just says that there are no updates since our last discussion, but Margo, who was here earlier, I think that they discussed it with HR.
Well, yeah. I had a quick discussion with HR about it too, and they were pretty supportive. So it would be good to start some next steps on that one. So maybe put together a proposal. Unit representative discussion. So seminar sent out a survey. Trish, do you want to?
So we got back only about 14 responses. And there wasn't like a huge landslide in one direction or another. So what I'd like to do is send the link back out and just see if we can get a little bit more input from the group before we bring it back to our committee. And our committee meets next week on Tuesday. So whatever we have between by our meeting next Tuesday, we'll finalize. So I'm going to send that back out today because I just didn't feel like it was enough information to really go forward with a good decision.
So just a reminder, this is the what do we do when a rep moves unit question that we had discussed in the last meeting. We want to find a way to keep them. So now the question is, how do we keep them? And Trish's survey had three options plus the make up your own option so that their committee can start putting together a proposal and resolution so we can make the changes and have a process.
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, so please give feedback to that committee so that we can work on that.
You're going to keep this and put in response in addition to what you have?
Yes.
So we've already done it.
That's right. Okay. It will know you've already done it.
Thank you. Any Okay, what do you need? Do you need one more here?
All right. Sorry.
Okay. On the calendar update, Nicole will open voting on the photos this week. We've gotten probably 20 submissions or so for photos for the calendar, and still waiting to know for sure whether we'll be able to afford printing the calendars this year or whether we'll be doing a digital one only. But either way, we'll have photos to vote on because we will have a calendar in some form. So thanks, Nicole, for organizing that.
Is that voting open to all staff or just staff council?
Just the staff council. Yes, yes, that's one of the few privileges of our position. We get to take the picture. So the next one, D, this one's pretty important. Types of employment changes. So we discussed earlier in the year that over the summer, human resources had put forward some policy and regulation changes, updating the definitions regarding temporary employees. And the biggest concern that we had at the time was that extended temporary employees would be losing their benefits, basically, to distinguish them from normal employees, partly to comply better with retirement guidelines. We pushed back and managed to keep the sick leave benefit for those employees because we thought from a cost perspective it really didn't make sense to cut. It's bad policy not to provide your employees with sick leave. We shouldn't be making people choose between a paycheck and coming in sick. And also, if sick employees come to work, they can't afford to stay home. The rest of your employees who have sick leave are all going to take it at much higher rates. So we pushed back on that successfully, saying that they retained sick leave for the extended temporary employees. But in the discussion, Eric Seastead, the Chief Human Resources Officer, kept saying, well, there's only, you know, 20 odd extended temporary employees in the system who will be impacted by this. Monique Music at Statewide did a Q&A with him in the Statewide Voice, and that's attached here as well. I strongly encourage you to read it and make sure that your units see it as well, because there are some pretty serious implications. The biggest one probably is the break in service required, which is if you're a temporary employee, now you used to have to have a break in service that was, I think, 2 weeks, 10 days of break in service before you had your next temporary appointment. So you could be a temporary employee, take 10 days off, basically, and then continue as a temporary employee again. That now has been changed to a 120-day break in service. So temporary employees who were being consistently re-engaged as temporary employees will now have this very large gap that they might have been expecting to be employed for. That's basically meant to help remedy bad hiring practices. If you have someone that's a temporary employee and you're having them stop for 10 days and then hiring them as a temporary employee again and doing that over and over and over again, you shouldn't have them as a temporary employee without benefits. You should have them as either a term-funded employee or a regular employee, and they should be getting benefits and they should be treated normally. So where the temporary employee category has been abused, hopefully that'll be a mechanism for those employees to not be taken advantage of. But we really wanted to stress the communication piece on this because we haven't seen much come from Statewide HR about this to make it really clear to those employees that they might be looking at a much bigger gap between employment with the university than they were expecting. Yes.
Sorry, can I ask a question?
Yeah. I'll try to answer.
So I believe that some people do take temporary employment positions with the university, and then when that ends, they take another one in a different department so that they're always on temporary status, but they can stay employed with the university, and they already know how to use Banner and all of our different tools. So that's going to preclude that, correct? It's trying to stop some one department from continually reemploying that person, but that means that that person, that individual, cannot then take a different position with the university, also in temporary status. They have to be on for the 4 months.
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure, but I think you're right. There are probably 650 temporary employees across the UA system that might have to take that break in service. That would be if all of them are expecting to continue after. So it probably is a lower number, but certainly more than 20. So most of this really was driven by complying with state and federal regulations between the Health Care Act and the Stable After Retirement regulations and guidelines. But I think the university could certainly do a better job of making this clear to people and making those expectations clear. While we continue to ask them to do that, it's probably also a good time for representatives to really do some outreach to our departments on this and make sure that our temporary employees know that these changes are coming and can affect them. Oh, yeah, online, Chris.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Thank you for filling my question. We have I don't know what their actual classification is, but SFOS has an employee that is contracted for a year. They are being benefited and that kind of thing, but the term ends in 1 year and would have to be renewed if we keep the person. Would that person be impacted by this policy?
No, that sounds like a term-funded contract, which means they're a regular employee. It's just we only have funding for a certain amount of time. And usually that's based on the idea that this project will continue for a certain amount of time. But that should be a regular benefited employee position. We've talked in the past year, I think, about some other issues affecting term-funded employees, particularly the amount of notice if their contract's not going to be extended. And I think that's still kind of probably an ongoing concern where we may want to push to get something into policy, at least at UAS, but preferably board policy about notice for term-funded employees not being continued. But I don't believe that person would be impacted from what you said. Obviously, they should probably talk to their HR person if they're concerned, but it sounds like they're term-funded and not temp.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you very much.
Any other questions or discussion on this one?
I was a little confused at the transition between temporary and extended temporary. It says temporary works 15 to 29 hours a week, but once you become an extended temporary, you're required to work 30 hours a week. So does that mean that if somebody's a temporary working, say, 20 hours a week, and they reach the limit of hours that they're allowed to work as a temp, and they go to extended temp, they all of a sudden have to work more hours?
It's probably based on an average and on a look back rather than any given week. That's usually how working hours are kind of counted for other types of employment. So I would expect that this was kind of a general guideline and an average rather than this one week out of 20, somebody worked 30. That probably shouldn't impact it. But
I know of employees who are retired and cannot get benefits because it would impact their retirement benefits, so they work as a temp, you know, for a little extra income, and I'm not sure. I'm confused about how that might affect them.
Yeah, so that actually, I think keeping those employees from being penalized by the state was part of the impetus for these changes, because the position of the state was that we weren't making a clear enough distinction between temporary and regular employees and types of assignments and so forth, is my understanding from the background I was given. And so that making sure that those employees fit very clearly into a temp box that the state will recognize should help them from inadvertently losing or having their retirement benefits impacted because of the way they're working with the university. So it's intended to very much help those employees in particular. But this is certainly something that, you know, this is board policy and regulation. The regulation only requires the president's signature. So if, as this is rolled out, we start to see real problems with it, I do believe it's something that we could say, whoa, hold up. If you changed this little bit here, it would make a big difference for the better and provide kind of adjustments to the course. So, certainly something to be aware of and something to kind of keep our finger on and see how it's moving.
I think from reading that, it seems like the difference between temporary and extended temporary is just whether or not they're qualifying for health coverage under ACA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the same statewide voice email, there was something about there's more information about the look back and how that would work for benefits. But reading that, that's what that looks like to me. Not that if you're temporary, you couldn't work more than 29 hours, but that if you worked more than 29 over a 6-month look back period, you'd need to be offered benefits according to ACA. Because otherwise, they seem to be the same. You know, they have the same limitation on how long they can work and have to take a break in service.
Yeah, I think that's it exactly. Thank you, Chris. Okay. Last item on our unfinished business, we have two open seats with the staff healthcare committee. One is a rep and one is an alternate. And so the staff healthcare committee is at the system level and reviews the health plan and the changes and provides feedback. And in the last year, what I've heard from Staff Alliance is that Staff Alliance didn't do the best job really using that committee and meeting as regularly as they should and getting the information out there, but they're intending to do a much better job this year and be more engaged with it. That's, I think, certainly a pretty powerful committee, because on the Joint Healthcare Committee, which covers all employees, staff have a very small vote because there's two staff representatives on the Joint Healthcare Committee, and then two for each of the unions. So unrepresented staff have a pretty, you know, 2 out of 10 seats, something like that. It's the separate mechanism of the Staff Healthcare Committee allows us to take kind of a bigger voice and a bigger stand. So if you're interested in serving on that committee and want some more information, just get in touch with me, Nate, or Nicole, and we can give you more information and or appoint you.
So who's currently on SHCC from UAS?
Leslie and David Vance is the alternate.
Okay.
Yeah, Leslie has been on, actually would also be a good person to talk to with questions because she served on that for quite a while. Leslie Waltz, engineering minds. Okay, internal committee reports. Brandy now.
Sorry about that. So nominations are open. They're going to stay open until the 16th, close of business. There'll be a 2-week break to vet out nominations, approvals, et cetera, and then voting will open the first week of November. And so far, everything's going good.
And yeah, it looks like there's been a really great response so far in terms of the number of nominations, which is quite encouraging. So as Nate said, please continue to keep those nominations coming in, and don't forget to nominate yourself if you'd like to continue and your election or your unit is up for election. So we don't want to lose you.
And a reminder email should go out today to everyone.
Okay, membership and rules.
Well, our report is attached, so pretty much the things we had talked about today as far as the survey that we're working on We also have an initiative Matthew is working on for us of kind of crafting a description of the roles and responsibilities for staff council members that we can hand new staff council reps so they have a better idea of what's expected of them and how to do that. And so Matthew's working on that, and he's going to get it to our committee, and then when we're ready, we'll bring it and present it to this larger group. And we are continuing to work on the reviews of the bylaws, but also the unit reviews, the unit makeup reviews, which are a little complex, and so the work is continuing. And so we did decide to push that off until after this election so that we wouldn't muddy the waters while the election's in process. Does anyone have any questions for membership and rules?
Thank you. Rural Affairs, Chris?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry about that. We have no new news since our last meeting. Our next meeting is the 20th day of the talk. I did want to FYI, we've lost two of our council members. They are no longer with the university, so we'll be dealing with that as well. All I have. Thank you.
Great. So if anyone's interested in joining Rural Affairs, it sounds like that would be a good opportunity as well to get engaged with some of those issues. And you could contact Chris. Staff Affairs.
Hi, so we had our first meeting, which had pretty low turnout. So I'd encourage any members who are not able to make the meetings to let me know. And if attendance is a problem, we can figure out another meeting time. But we talked about our ongoing concern with staff performance evaluations, and also a good deal about morale issues and overburdened staff and people not being able to take leave. We didn't really feel like it was a good opportunity to come to any sort of actionable items because we did have only the three of us, four of us at the time. But we hope to come up with some ideas and maybe think of some creative options. We'd like to include Brad and perhaps Marco in on some of those conversations in the future. So if you have any questions, my notes are attached. And that's all that I released to report.
Great. Thank you.
And university advocacy. Jamie, I see on the notes here that you guys, oh, yeah, there you did. So you guys will meet Wednesday from 10 to 11.
Thank you.
Okay. Staff achievements and highlights.
I have one. This 2 weeks ago, it was the first use of the personal safety leave, wasn't it? I always manage to be out of town when there are ice storms, which is usually lucky, but it also means I've missed both times we've actually done admin leave for this thing. But this is something that I think is a staff council achievement. The issue of admin leave during these kinds of weather events has been a problem since, was it 2009 when we had the November ice storm, 2010?
Yeah.
Right, that Thanksgiving week when pretty much everything in Fairbanks shut down. And since then, you know, periodically staff council said we need to do something about this, aided, I think, by the weather. And now we have a system, which unfortunately it looks like we're going to have to continue using. But that's something that staff council did that I think we deserve kudos for.
Most definitely. Yeah, we mentioned that to three staff as well with the Chancellor, Kari, and Curry, thanks us for our feedback as well because she was kind of collecting some general information from units and such about how it works and how we best to make it work well in the future as well. So, any other staff achievements and highlights? Trish?
I don't have this in dollars yet. I'm hoping to get something like that, but we were having some issues with one of the large turbine generators at the power plant. And one of our people started asking why there's got to be a better way to do this technology. And he did some research and he found out a different technology that's been used in power plants down south. And even some in town that we didn't know about it. So he did all the legwork, had the contractor come up, we changed things over just in time for this last weather event that happened. The kinds of hits that we were taking with our electric system would have really damaged our turbine, because our instrument showed at least nine good hits that would have scored our turbine pretty hard and would have required, I believe, I'm going to get the hard numbers, but I believe it would have been like $100,000 in repairs again. And so I just, you know, kudos to all the groups, including Dino here with his team that helped support all that work being done. But those are one of those invisible things where it's a lot of money that we could have had to spend and we didn't because somebody was saying there's got to be a better way and found a better way. So.
That's awesome. Thank you, Trish. And yeah, if you get numbers, I would be very interested in hearing them and being able to report them out further as well.
Okay.
Anybody else?
I will say. So this is kind of an ongoing one, and I'm also going to use it as an opportunity to promote some of the general work that's going on at IARC. But in March, as part of the U.S.'s chairship of the Arctic Council, we are having a major series of science conferences in March called Arctic Science Summit Week. And there are a number of people at IARC and kind of all over Westridge that are doing extra work on top of their typical duties to make sure that it gets organized and kind of goes off without a hitch. But one of the people that's taking the lead, some of you that work up on Westridge might know her name is Kristen Tim. And so I would like to recognize her. And I think within the coming weeks, you know, the website for Arctic Science Summit Week is live now, so you can go and look at it and registration's open. But I think in the coming weeks and months, you'll begin to see a lot more promotional materials around the conference and become aware that this is a major event. It happens over spring break, and it's going to be a major event for UAF in general. There will be about 1,000 people here from kind of all over the world. But Kristen is sort of spearheading a lot of the organizational effort, so I would like to recognize her.
Awesome. I had one too that also related to the power outages. We, the Geophysical Institute, there was a meeting being held at the Westmark, organized by American Geophysical Unions of about 100 scientists from all over the world, and the power went out at the Westmark, and they couldn't continue their week-long meeting. And Diana Campbell came in on the snow day and arranged for that meeting to be moved here to the ballroom for the day. Within about 3 hours, she had them buses lined up to transport them. They had food. They had the room arranged, and they continued their meeting on schedule on Wednesday. So, and they were very grateful for that. And it's called the Chapman Conference after Sidney Chapman, same that the building is named after. So they were actually able to take a group photo in the snow in front of the Chapman building. So
that's excellent. Any others? Any online? Great. Thank you, guys. So now we have Chancellor Powers.
Well, thank you, Fran. Good morning. Here's a quick update on some of the things I've been working on. As you can imagine, you step into an interim role like this, and it is a steep learning curve. So a bit of this is a repeat, but I think it's important. I'll tell you how we're advancing on some of the projects and priorities that are on the agenda. 3 months out, when Brian was leaving, the core cabinet asked him, here's what we need from you within the next 3 months before you leave. And so they created this universe of roughly 200 projects is what it was that was something was happening where they needed help on. When I came in, a month before I came in, they identified another top five projects within each vice chancellor's sphere of influence that needed something needed to be addressed. So I had this universe of 200 and some odd issues that are percolating and should be aware of, be able to help address. And what I had asked the cabinet to do is, there is not a lot that I can do in one year or 9 months. We're not going to redo a strategic plan. We're not going to wipe the slate clean. We're going to advance what an incredible leader like Brian Rogers was moving through his time here, and some wonderful leaders on that cabinet. And so we spent last Saturday taking this universe of 200 projects, prioritizing them, and we came to a list of about 25 hot topics that we're working on. And what I'd like to do is just take a minute. This is going through, it's a work in progress, obviously, and in the future I hope to have some kind of scorecard or tracking system that I can share with you so you can see where we're headed in terms of initiatives this year. But I'll just take a few moments and hit them so you're aware of what we'll be reporting on. At the top of the list is the whole Title IX issue and campus safety and support. And very specifically, it relates to sexual assault and gender equality and what I think is someone I think is Mae Marsh, who said this whole issue of Title IX, what you see unfold in the headlines across the country over the last 18 months or so, as the Obama administration pushed the Title IX to broaden that definition, is a mini civil rights movement. I feel like this is the next civil rights movement. I think that's very true. You've seen John Krakauer's book, Missoula, and I understand in several weeks there will be a showing of the Hunting Ground documentary on sexual assault on campuses, etc. So it's going to receive a great deal of attention. And I was asked by the students yesterday what you intend to do with it. There will be town hall meetings. There will be various breakout sessions. This whole Green Dot program is extremely impressive. And to watch Keith Mallard push that has been a real lesson for me. I'd like to see a movement across the entire campus related to that. So it's faculty, staff, and students, an entire community, academic community, embracing something like that. And that's in the works. So at the top of the list, and this is very much on the region's priority list as well, is to be fully compliant with Title IX. Second issue is state funding advocacy. Mike Sraga is charged with this issue. Third issue, Larry Heinzman on the federal funding and advocacy and the tracking of federal funding, especially as it relates to HARP and ERSCOPE, conflict minerals. A fourth area is to secure funding for this engineering building. We have the planning process underway now and the lobbying requirements in order to get this on the governor's budget by early December and then to push it through the legislative session in the spring. Fifth is the whole FY17 budget development. I can talk about that in a little bit. And Susan Heinrichs will head that up. Sixth area is the International Arctic Initiatives, Mike Sraga, and that's to continue to position UAF as the Arctic leader. The seventh area is the Arctic Research Initiatives, and again, this is Larry's area. Nate had mentioned this Arctic Science Summit week. That's going to be a real showcase, international showcase for this campus. Want to make sure resources are deployed, that this comes off exceptionally well. Eighth area is, again, Arctic initiatives relative to Arctic indigenous peoples, and Yvonne has that. How can I, again, help support those initiatives that are occurring within the rural areas? Nine is donor development. This was an area that was fascinating. Brian Rogers, in 7 years, headed up an effort that raised over $100 million. Really incredible. We have a great development team growing, emerging here at UAS, which is really the envy, I think, of the rest of the system. The tenth area is to fill some of these key leadership positions. Research, obviously, the chancellor. I will not be on that committee, but I just want to make sure it's on target, on progress. We're moving through it. We have an outside group involved with that. Very typical in a search like this. 11 would be marketing communication related to the various campus supporters, advisory committees, alumni groups, student groups. There's a whole host of bodies that have input and could be very valuable as we try to advance initiatives such as the engineering building. But anyway, make sure those communications are on target. Susan is charged with advancing the chemical engineering program. She's also charged with e-learning and continuing to expand online offerings. 14th priority relates to CARI's area, Vice Chancellor for Admin Services, and that relates to employee engagement and morale. 15th area, again, Mike Sprague's area on undergraduate recruitment. 16th, Susan's undergraduate retention. And it's one of the biggest bangs for the buck we can help our students with if we can get them through on a reasonable schedule. 17th area is the whole area of special program review as we struggle with the budgetary constraints. 18th, CARI also has on funding deferred maintenance. I've mentioned this, but here's a campus dates back to 1917, and we have $800 million in deferred maintenance. It is an absolutely critically important area as a manager of a campus that we should be focused on. 19th area, tribal college partnerships, charged Yvonne with that. 20th area, we'll be watching the statewide transition recommendations and how that could impact this campus. CARI's responsible for that. Indigenous knowledge and studies and the capacity of our programming from certificate to PhD levels, Yvonne is that. Larry, specifically on the Sikuliak and ASAP and the Kwazi and HAARP. Sikuliak, we need to keep busy in order to keep that contract when it comes up. And it's a bit of actually business development in that area, and that would be Larry's. 23rd is this whole campus safety, and that is, among other things, the Green Dot program. Active shooter protocols, after what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. Our plan is a bit out of date, and we'll be updating that. 24th area are Susan's academic program reviews, especially the low enrollment, high cost areas, and making sure we're doing the best we can, building the most efficient learning model there. 25th, campus aesthetics. I'll mention that in just a moment. I'll take that, and then Susan with the vet med program and growing that program. So again, 200 projects. So how do you get your arms around it? We sat down, we ranked them, we prioritized them, we split them up, and I'll now create a scorecard of these 25, 26 projects. I'll bring that back, let you know where things are going. But at the end of May, I want to reflect back on the scorecard and say, indeed, something happened these 9 months. And those are the priorities that we see. Let me just talk a little bit about campus aesthetics. So here we are in a downturn, obviously. And on one of the first weeks I was here, Todd Paris is getting a few photos, beautiful golden colors. Plant Services is out taking care of the grounds, and he waxed effusively about what an incredible job they're doing in a tight budget constraint. And let me make a jump, and then I'll come back. I am embarrassed to say this, but when we were at the hospital, we went through our no smoking campaign. We eliminated smoking. Many of the smokers went right across the street to private or school property, Lathrop property, because it was not on the hospital campus. And on one particular day, a smoker took a drag, and because we couldn't get the cigarette butts picked up, we just assigned someone to hit all the areas around campus, and especially those not designated smoking areas, but those areas where people tended to congregate and just pick up the butts. This one smoker threw the butt on the ground and said, "There, you can pick that one up." That is so offensive, it sparked a movement at the hospital where everybody started picking up cigarette butts and litter and things like that. And as I think of the pressures we're all under, and where are some of the first cuts? It's often Plant Services. It's not, you don't go to academics right away in a university setting. You go to support systems. And it's unfortunate, but that's reality. What greater message to demonstrate a culture of support, a culture of taking care of one another, than helping out with everybody engaged in litter? And what I would like to suggest and keep alive is this topic and a call to action. As you're walking across campus and you see the paper cups or the scraps of paper, or you're in a building and chairs are in disarray, let's start a movement at a time where dollars are very, very tight to help one another and to create this culture of caring and fits hand in glove, obviously much less dramatic and upsetting than a Title IX issue. But it's all related. It's all building a community. So I have aesthetics, and I wanted to actually fund some little white lights out here. In the dark, I really believe in winterscaping, lightscaping. But no matter what I do, there's going to be criticism, because how come you didn't put that money to an academic program? What about the energy? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's just pick up. Let's just get everybody to own this campus. That ownership issue is tough on a university campus because of the turnover, but especially with staff and faculty, could be great leaders. So, long-winded editorial there, but that is what I had on my aesthetics. Budget process. We are in the process of reinstituting the Planning and Budget Committee. That committee will be named shortly. We're looking for the vice chancellors to propose targets and to get them to the Planning and Budget Committee. And then ultimately, looking way ahead, we'd be looking at March recommendations that go to the core council. Now, I don't have a lot of information right now, but I'll be able to report, I suspect, next month at some very specific target dates, formation dates for the committee, the whole process that I'll be able to describe then. So early November, and then we'll shoot for probably a mid-spring final budget that will go to the core council for ultimate approval. So very, very brief, but that gives you an idea where we're headed, and I should have much more next month. So anyway, quick overview of kind of where I'm headed at the moment, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I have a question on the Planning and Budget Committee. Last year, staff council had appointed a representative to serve on that, which I think was incredibly important in helping staff
understand the process as it was going through, feel engaged with it, and feel a little bit more safe and comfortable with it, and also just ensure that the understanding for staff of what was coming out of it was clear and we could advocate for things as opposed to just reacting to them. So I would strongly encourage that we have the opportunity to appoint a representative from staff council to that committee again this year.
Great suggestion. I'll take that back. I can't imagine not having someone, but I appreciate that. We'll make sure of that.
Great. Thank you.
I just on the topic of campus safety, you know, I certainly don't want to devalue the training, you know, for an active shooter situation, that sort of thing, but I would definitely urge that we think about, you know, gun death on campus, and, you know, it's probably far less likely to be an active shooter incident. It's more likely, as we've seen in the last few years, saying that someone might take their own life. So I would just add, you know, urge that when we're looking at campus safety, we also be thinking about those kinds of events. And there's also a fourth fatality on campus, I think, 6 years ago. That wasn't a gun death, but you know, that we'd be looking at that and asking the question of how do we help prevent those kinds of incidents, and what kind of resources are there for our community. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, great idea. I met with the students yesterday, and they had a survey going on behavioral health issues. Especially related to stress, and it had seeds in the whole issue of those suicides. But anyway, good point.
I have a question on the campus cleanup for the aesthetics.
Yes.
Is there going to be emails and such going out for all faculty and staff and students to kind of participate in that? Because I do agree, when I get out of my car from the parking lot, by the time I get to the building, I got a bunch of trash in my bag.
Yeah.
I find bags and McDonald's stuff, and I do agree, it makes it nice to have it litter-free, but I just didn't know if it was going to be a campus-wide where everybody, there's going to be a campaign where we all get emails and notices and
yep.
try to help, or if there's going to be, like, bags distributed where we can go pick up, and people have and keep your cars to pick up litter to help.
So one, thank you for doing that. That's great. It's ownership in your campus. We haven't fleshed out the plan yet. All great ideas. I'll talk with Faye and Nate as we get talking. It relates also with the volunteer day to some degree. You know, there's the support to the community, and yet there's our own community. But all good ideas, and we'll see what this looks like. I haven't gotten that far yet, but I hope there's that same sense of ownership with others. That's great.
I had something for you. You were stating that your position is interim, and you want to push some of the agenda that's already on the table from the prior chancellor, and one of the things that we in the staff affairs were interested in, is very interested in, especially in the current climate at the university as far as staff is concerned, is our grievance policy, or lack of a grievance policy. The university used to have a very extensive grievance procedure, and it was eliminated. And you know, with the current climate, there's been a lot of people that have lost their jobs, and a lot of people felt pretty powerless as far as any kind of a pathway through where they felt they got a fair shake in a grievance procedure of some kind. I know this might be new on the table for you, but would it be something that you would even delve into, or you'd rather that we wait for the permanent chancellor replacement to propose these kind of things to?
It's very reasonable request. I should know offhand what that grievance issue is. We discussed this.
Yeah, so when the layoff policy was changed, it was done very quickly because we wanted to, they were changing the notice period for layoffs for, that was the major point of the policy change, to change the notice period for layoffs for exempt employees from 6 months down to 90 days. And it was done as an emergency effort because in order to have it in place to use for this fiscal year. But at the time they did that, anticipating a higher number of layoffs in the coming years, they attempted to, from the HR perspective, streamline the process by removing the grievance process and putting in place a review process, which has a lot fewer teeth potentially and felt to us as employees to be a very concerning change. And so, you know, at the system level, staff are starting to look at it, staff alliance, but it was also something that we were just concerned about in general, particularly as UAS staff. This, what does this review process look like? How is it used? How does that change the staff members' rights?
Okay. And that's your specific question, the grievance part from the grievance to the review.
Right. And but even before that, even before the latest layoff and budgetary crisis, I'm even going back 10, 15 years, there was a pretty extensive grievance process here that was eliminated in a whim. It used to be in the university policies and regulations, and it was just eliminated just completely. Because at that point, the university felt that, well, all it became was a bunch of lawyers from the university, and the staff people were lawyering up, and so it kind of eliminated the whole grievance necessity of a grievance process. But I thought the grievance process was a very useful thing before that, because it took care of some problems before it ever went to. It got to the point where everybody had lawyers involved.
Yeah. Here's my first thought right out of the gate. Probably not inclined to change it at this unprecedented time because of the thought, I assume, knowing Brian Rogers, that went into this. Now, that said, it would be interesting, just talking off the top of my head, what, as Faye has suggested, what does it look like? What's the experience? Is it working? And we'll take this up and see if there's a let me get a little bit better understanding if there's some egregious practices or even
yes, a lot bigger issue than for this little discussion here. Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Sure. We'll pick it up as a topic for our ongoing meeting.
And maybe that'd be something that. We could invite you to a staff council meeting, a staff affairs meeting, because that's sort of what we're discussing that subject currently.
Okay.
Actually, this occurs to me too, just knowing that the staff alliance look at this at a system level isn't moving particularly quickly. If staff alliance wanted to take it up from a UAF perspective and look at what we used to have, what we have now, what we've lost, what we'd like to have, and put forward a proposal and resolution. That's another way to do it, where it could come up from UAF and we could take it to staff alliance and say, well, here's what we passed at UAF about this.
Yeah.
Take it to the system level and try to get policy change there, where you guys might just, I think you've got a lot of historical knowledge about it, and then staff affairs committee tends to move things pretty quickly and pretty comprehensively as well, like all our committees at UAS do, where it might be a little faster and more effective than a staff alliance committee. Or they could work cooperatively if that one gets going, but it might be worth having one at a campus level to really get that ground level impact of what's happening to staff. So I would encourage you guys to keep talking about it. Yeah.
And this has been on our agenda. Other questions?
So I'll go back to your safety and your aesthetic here. My name is Dino Jolly. I work down at the power plant. You know, safety is our, without safety, there wouldn't be any lights. But dealing with a bunch of different vendors and different people coming and going and involved in different industry, something I picked up, I don't know if anybody else, it was called the SOS program, called See It, Own It, Solve It. And it's something simple, something everyone can remember. I've tried to implement that in my maintenance shop down at the plant, though, but the simple little SOS, see it on its own.
Great. Great suggestion, yeah. You know, sometimes it's the straightforward, simple things like that, and especially this ownership concept. As I said previously, the university is the jewel of the community, and if more people, feel that ownership, safety, culture of support, it's a whole kind of code of the North philosophy. We don't, somebody stranded on the side of a highway in 40 below weather, we stop. In fact, there used to be a law. I don't know if that's still on the books or not. But anyway, your point is well taken. Those are the simple steps I'd like to see enacted. It doesn't cost anything but a change, a continued building of attitude.
So I have kind of a comment about the active shooter training that's available. My department basically pursued that for us because our leadership felt like it was needed for our positions as they were maybe in perhaps high-risk areas. But at the time, I was very much like, oh, maybe everybody has access to this, but realistically, I don't know that other departments do. And so I just kind of wonder if it seemed like it was kind of hard for us to get it scheduled and get it on the calendar and get it available for people. Is the availability of that training going to increase? Is it going to become mandatory? I don't know that mandatory is really the best way to go because I know that we're all busy people, but I do think it was really helpful, and it would not be the worst idea to make it mandatory.
With the recent events, we discovered our plan is not up to date. So the first thing to do is get it up to date, and in that, we'll look at I'll be able to raise this if it's helpful, how comprehensively we can roll this out. I don't know offhand either if it's mandatory or not. At the hospital, it wasn't mandatory, and yet we had many, many people actively engaged. So points well taken. We'll make sure we consider that as we update this plan.
We have two comments online. The first one, really good to include rural campuses and our rural facilities in those initiatives and programs. Always a good reminder for us here in Fairbanks.
Yes.
And then Jamie notes that the Murray Auditorium tomorrow will be hosting an active shooter training from 3 to 4. And anyone interested in attending, we'll have Kyle Carrington from the University Police Department presenting that training. So, so there's an available one tomorrow if you're interested in checking out what the current offering looks like. That might also be a good chance, if you're available, to look at it, check it out, and then provide feedback as well if it might be reviewed and updated.
Sounds good. And to Christopher, I just think I'm glad you spoke up. Keep me honest, because I forget sometimes that outline area. Even though we have Yvonne hooked in here, I think on these initiatives pretty well. But thanks for the reminder.
Chris is a good representative for this too, because he's at the Seward Marine Center, I believe.
Oh.
So
wait,
I blew the point. Thank you. So from one of our outlying ones, that's not part of the College of Rural and Community Development. We have any number of sites that fall under various schools and colleges and can sometimes be very Lena Point in Juneau for UAF Fisheries. Sorry, my repeated error there. We've got some really good diversity on staff council with some of our rural reps at our rural campuses and then also at our facilities throughout the state.
Excellent. Thanks, Christopher. Other questions or comments?
Do you have the ability to go into at all what Carrie's role or what her plans are for the employee morale-related issue?
I don't have the details. We fleshed out the priorities, and now comes what are the specific steps. I do know the engagement survey, though. It will be key, and will provide a baseline. And we're all skeptics. And so you start right from the beginning. A lot of people won't participate. I would encourage people to fill that out. It gives us a good baseline to move forward. But that's where things will start, probably the results of that that survey. I should again, hopefully by next month we'll have some more meat on the bones here and be able to talk about specific steps.
Thank you.
Is there a timeline on that survey, or is it still a couple months out? Or
I think it is. It's out in the next week or two.
Okay.
I think.
Thank you very much for joining us, Chancellor Powers. We appreciate it as always.
Thank you very much.
So we have two items of new business. The first one will hopefully be very quick. So I believe very strongly in sticking to the time that we agree to, which means believe very strongly in being out of here at 11 o'clock if we say we're going to be out of here at 11 o'clock, because we all have our busy people with lots going on in our schedules, and it's not fair to say we'll be done at this time and then keep you. But I felt like I'm rushing through the agenda quite often, and I'm okay doing that if that's okay with you guys, but if you're feeling shortchanged because of the rushing, and would prefer to have our regular meeting time end 15 minutes later to give a little bit more breathing room or time for discussion, I'm 100% open to doing that. So I'd like to either have a bit of discussion and do a quick informal poll, show of hands or eyes online for sticking with our current meeting time or extending it by 15 minutes. With the thought that I would not be trying to add additional things into fill that 15 minutes, we just would have it there blocked if we need it. So, any thoughts, comments?
My thought is to keep it like it is. So that's just what I'm thinking. It kind of forces us to move it along. I think it's a good thing. If we do get into discussions, I think we have enough committees that we can float that kind of stuff to committee discussions.
Brandy, do I see that over there too?
I agree to extend it. I already blocked my calendar to 11:30 on staff council meeting days because we've never ended early or on time since I started. Faye got it 6 seconds over, I think, at the August meeting.
Okay. And
I also sometimes feel like we cut roundtables short, or people have to leave and then they don't get an opportunity to put their input in because they're not here and that part isn't recorded.
So I appreciate that you started on time this morning. I think our new members last spring, I think it regularly started 15 minutes late. And so today you guys have been on schedule, and the Chancellor was very, provided a lot of additional information. And so I think, time to shoot for 11 o'clock is my recommendation, and starting on time.
Yeah, and starting on time, requires obviously vigorous attendance on time from everyone, because if I don't have a quorum in the room, I it's not really worth getting started at that time. So, but excellent point. It makes it easier for all of us if we're all here and ready to go, or onto the hangout right on time. Other comments?
Yeah. I would be all for an extension of 15 minutes, just because I'm looking at the time now and we still have more things to talk about. And I say that because you guys do a really good job of keeping on track, but some things take longer than 5 minutes to discuss that are on, that are blocked off. So I'm okay with an additional 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'd vote for extending the time a bit too and having time to cover things more thoroughly. And, I block out basically the morning anyway, so it's not going to change anything for me.
Trish?
I would also be in favor of extending some, just because we only get together as a whole group once a month, and it does feel like sometimes we're just galloping through and don't really have a chance to consider things. So
I would appreciate a little bit more time.
Okay. So I think we've heard comments on both sides, and now because of the timeline today and the fact that we have a bunch of other stuff, could I just see a quick, informal, non-binding show of hands for, we'll start with, for extending the staff council meetings by 15 minutes. Okay. What about online? My mental note was just overwhelming. Okay. All right. So I am seeing. Okay. So, yeah, I'm seeing probably a strong majority. Okay, don't need to be formally extended. I think it's still in the strong majority of extending the extra 15 minutes, but I think we can also do our best to not overload the agenda with things so that we may be able to get out a little earlier. The sooner we decide, you mean the sooner we decide that it'll be longer, Selena, so that you know earlier in the meeting if you'll be here late? Okay. All right. We don't require formal action to extend that, right? There's nothing in our constitution or bylaws about the time.
No, the only thing that we have would be the meeting schedule that we passed, but we're not changing the dates, and I think we just passed the
Alright, so let's try this. For the next meeting, we'll block an extra 15 minutes. I won't try to pack anything extra into the agenda, and we can just try it for the next one and see how it goes and kind of keep it there. I will also try to be a little bit less neurotic about wrapping up exactly on time. So, thank you guys for your thoughtful feedback there. The next piece under the new business was the UIA statewide transformation team preliminary report, which is attached to the agenda in its entirety, and there's also the link to provide direct feedback. So we heard Faculty Senate will be taking up a resolution to endorse this report, and it's general ideas. The items contained in the report are very specific to certain functional areas where I'd like staff to think about it a lot more before, maybe put it on our next meeting if we want to take any formal action on it, just because there might be things in here that staff members, say, in finance totally love. And there might be things in the student K-12 bit that people are like, oh, no, this would be terrible for us. It's so diverse by functional area that there's very little in it that I think affects us as a staff body as a whole. But for those of you who've had a chance to read through it, are there any initial thoughts or things you'd like to highlight for discussion? And I would encourage everyone to take the time to read it. It goes pretty quickly. There's a lot of bullets and things in there taking up space. So, okay. Well, I'll put it on the agenda again with maybe a little bit more discussion time next month. And if everyone could have read it and try and talk to your departments or your units about it too, and so we'll see if we have any actual formal staff opinions on this from a staff council perspective for the next meeting. But I think it is very important about the direction of the university and what we're responsible for at UAS, because a lot of the recommendations are if CY doesn't do it, UAS will do it instead, or UAA will do it instead, or it'll go somewhere else, or it'll just go away. But all of those things will impact us one way or another, not as directly as it will to statewide staff, but and I would expect our OIT people, too, to have a lot of thoughts
on it. They're probably the closest to it from UAF perspective for some of the things. So. Okay. Questions on that? Comments on that?
I think it would be a good idea if the staff council had an opinion about the overall paper, and it, I think they're only open until the end of the month for comments, right? So if we were able to say something before the end of the month might be more powerful than if we waited until November or December. And so it's an opportunity to demonstrate as a cohesive body that we can say a yay or a nay, since it really is the president's sort of opening salvo to do something with the three campuses.
Feedback to representatives for feedback. Basically, just a, we can do a endorse the report, endorse the preservation, and a big comment place. And I would expect most of the feedback to really be in comments. I can summarize the feedback in a formal memo. If we want to, I'll also add an option on there. Would do we want a resolution? And can, we can do a resolution with online voting. Okay, so then we can put that option forward. So. Okay. Yeah, let's clarify that because it looks a little different on the one attached to the report. So I'll try to get the form out this week then for some pretty quick turnaround, ideally by next end of next week. I think that's a good discussion. Unless anyone's opposed to that approach. Okay, yeah, I think that's a good way to go at it. Announcements, we already talked about meeting with the consultant on Wednesday. The details of that will go out. I'd also like to now point out, as Brandy mentioned, when we do roundtable, that's not recorded and it doesn't go on the minutes. That's off the record for roundtable. And so there have been a few times lately where people have made announcements during roundtable just because I think a chance didn't come up in the meeting, but then unfortunately those never go on the record because it happened while we were off the record. So I'll just throw that open now. If anyone has an announcement that they would like to go on the record, feel free.
Not an announcement, but I know I did it because we went through the written reports so quickly. Of course, they're written for a purpose, but it would be nice to just get a quick heads up of. Do you have anything you want to highlight or say from the external reports?
Good call. All right. Any other?
Yeah. We asked Brad if the KJEP software that they were just talking about, if that was only at UAF or if it was statewide, and they said it's statewide.
It is statewide. So the UA system has purchased the modules. And then we actually, it'll be configured differently for each university, but it'll be how they're contract and share. So we won't have to do things the way UAM does things if we don't want to. It'll be branded for UAF. You know, our site will look UAF. And the decisions we make about how to use it, we can make at UAF. With the ability to cooperate and share best practices across universities, but, so it's owned by the system, but we each kind of have our own arm of it. Yeah. All right. So committee report, the performance evaluation joint campaign hasn't done anything because I haven't said, let's do anything with this yet. That was one I made up. In part because starting to hear about it going into KJEP and this new form coming out and a couple other things, it sounded like maybe there was movement on it that we don't want to muddle too much, but I think focusing on a get out the evaluation campaign as the job is implemented would be a good strategy, and so probably good to start thinking about now so that it's ready to go. So that's on my to-do list. we still have it on here to rise for staff sustainability fee ad hoc committee. Brad, I know from master planning you had kind of gotten some different information or different perspective maybe about an approach to this. Do you want to?
I just, Ian Olson is on the master planning committee and had mentioned that the RISE board was looking at this fee, and he said that, yeah, they've been talking to faculty senate and also staff council, and I raised this question because the last thing I remember hearing at staff council is that we had said, or someone on the committee had said, it's not something we are interested in. But from what Ian was saying, it sounded like it was going through. So that's what I was trying to clarify.
Yeah, and I think what you mentioned in your email as well was they're looking at if they set it up so employees can do direct deposit, if the RISE board takes care of that and has the account and has a place where employees could donate, would we let employees know, hey, you can do that? And absolutely, they come during public comment and say, hey, you can do payroll deduction to support this fee if you want to. It was just we weren't going to take a formal position as staff council advocating one cause to donate to over any other, if that's...
Yeah, for years we've had an employee... Is this working? For years we've had an employee giving campaign. I worked for the development office in the annual giving department, and we've put a hold on it for the last 2 years for reasons, for staff morale and the budget. And there's a lot of... other places that employees might want to give back to the university. So I think taking a position and saying we want you to match this fee in particular just isn't the best way to rally folks to give back to the university. There might be other places. I mean, sure, if they want to give there, but there might be a lot of other places. So we'd rather, if we're going to be messaging, giving back, not taking one, but can't taking one in particular that we encourage them to give to.
So yeah, I think probably the way to do that without formally endorsing this one over any others would be they could come, if they've got it all set up, and say, hey, the same way any other group could come during public comment and say, hey, here's our thing, here's the word, you know, here's how you do it. In the same way, if anyone came to public comment to talk to us about anything, we would put that out to staff. We're just helping spread their message, but we're not saying, as your governance body, we want to match this. This is an initiative of staff council. Maybe I can touch base with the sustainability office and just let them know that there's this kind of balanced approach we'd rather take to kind of cover both approaches. All right, on the external committee reports, does anyone have anything they'd like to highlight? Thanks, Brad.
I have a question for SHCC, and I don't think we have any members of the group with us, but I know they really only meet when JHCC meets, and JHCC, I think, just now met for the first time since last May. Is there a schedule for SHCC? Are they going to start meeting again?
I know that they're certainly planning to, but I don't know that a schedule has gone out yet.
Okay.
The last I heard was they were trying to make sure they had the names of all the representatives who were serving on it, which is, again, if you're interested in serving on it, we need you. And so then once they have the membership, they'll get that scheduled and get moving. Okay. And just a quick note, the employee engagement survey message just went out. You should have it in your email. It'll open October 12th and close October 23rd. And again, that the way they're sending that out is not anyone with the link can fill it out. It's going out to specific individuals, quite a lot of them. But if you don't get the link, it's because they didn't pull your information out of Banner and send it to you. They're trying to get a really distributed sample. So they actually picked the sample size from Banner and are sending the link out in a targeted way, but their message will be pretty clear on that. So it's not one that you can send around and encourage people to take by sharing the link.
But we will all get paid, right?
I'm not sure that it does absolutely everybody. I'm not sure on that. I think it's the distributed sample.
I have a question. I missed what link is this? What report or survey
that
It's an employee engagement survey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The chancellor sent a message or two about it last week or the week before. I think it's important to have it from Kari.
Okay.
Morrell, and
Okay.
And
I think it's the name of it.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of got lost for a minute.
Yep. It's the one that at our August staff council meeting, Anita Hartman from HR and Carla from marketing came and spoke to us about. So that's the one we're talking about that's going out. Okay. Anything else on the external UAF committee report? No? Okay. So I think we're ready for a
round table.
Could I?
Not quite yet. Oh. I had one more thing.
Okay.
I want to be a volunteer for the item H.
Parking Advisory Committee. Great. Did we get that? Oh, we already have that one. Sorry, that's just an error on the agenda. Sorry. Okay. Are you ready for round table?